Good morning. This is Norman Davis reading to you from the Decatur Tribune Online, and today's date is October 5th, 2015. Let's get started with our local news. City Council receives proposed hotel redevelopment agreement in Decatur on today. The Decatur City Council on Monday agreed to receive and file an agreement that, if approved, could help facilitate the development of a new 80-room hotel on the city's east side. The agreement with Evergreen Hospitality, LLC, would call for the city to share 50% of the current hotel use tax for 5 years from a New Hampton Inn hotel being considered for the now vacant parcel at 2225 South Mount Zion Road in Decatur. The developer would invest more than $7 million in the development, with the goal being to begin construction yet this year of all pending approvals if all pending approvals can be obtained. The project is expected to provide local construction jobs for approximately 110 tradespeople over the construction period of 6 to 9 months, and the hotel is expected to support 30 full-time equivalent employees once open. It is anticipated that an additional hotel in this location will create a hotel cluster, which will attract additional visitors to the area, providing benefits to retailers and restaurants. In many instances, the city receives and files agreements in advance of a formal vote to allow for a review prior to official action. The Decatur City Council will formally consider the agreement at the October 19th council meeting. Next story, Decatur Police Department to partner with Project AVA in its Halloween boutique program by being a local collection site for costumes. The Decatur Police Department will partner with Project AVA and their Halloween boutique program this Halloween season by being a local collection site for new or gently used Halloween costumes. Halloween is such an exciting time for kids. It's a time for them to run around carefree and collect candy, participate in their in-class Halloween parties, and attend parades in their communities and at the schools, all while dressed up as their favorite characters or as traditional Halloween icons. Unfortunately for some children, this is not the reality of this childhood holiday. Some families struggle with providing daily essentials and much less purchasing a Halloween costume. Often these children feel left out or simply don't participate due to their family not having the means to purchase a costume. Project AVA has therefore introduced their Halloween boutique program. From September 25, 2015 to October 23, 2015, Project AVA will be collecting new and gently used Halloween costumes from size toddler through youth size large at various collection sites in Edwardsville, Illinois, Decatur, Illinois, and Orlando, Florida to provide to children in need these communities. Their goal is to reach children who would otherwise not have a costume and make their day just as enjoyable as the rest of their peers. Project AVA will take the collected costumes and drop them off at local schools, early childhood and parent education centers, and food pantries that have been identified as having a need. The costumes will then be distributed to the children that the schools and organizations see fit to keep the identity of the children and the families private. If you wish to donate a costume to Project AVA and the Decatur Police Department, we'll have a collection box available in our front lobby from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. daily, Monday through Friday. The Decatur Police Department is located at 707 South West Southside Drive. If you wish to contribute financially, and that can be done through the Project AVA website. To view their website and for additional information on Project AVA and their mission to support at-risk children and parents by aligning with established community agencies, providing financial resources in a community of dedicated volunteers, go to www.project-AVA.org or their Facebook page at https://www.facebook.com/alwaysvalueanother, all one word. Questions about the collections, times, and program can also be addressed to the Decatur Police Department and Professional Standards Unit at 424-2743. In Decatur Council news, the council appoints a new member, approves the sewer plan. September 21st, the Decatur Council once again has a full complement of members following action Monday night with one of its first orders of business being to approve the next steps to address sewer backups in the city. Council members voted in favor of a resolution to appoint Chris Funk to fill the council seat vacated by August appointment of Julie Moore Wolf to the position of mayor. Councilman Funk, who serves as Senior Vice President and Chief Credit Officer for Hickory Point Bank and Trust, was officially sworn in as part of Monday's regularly scheduled Decatur City Council member meeting for a term that will extend until next municipal election in August and April of 2017. Later in the meeting, members voted to support a negotiated administrative compliance order between the city and the United States Environmental Protection Agency and to authorize a detailed study of the city's sanitary sewer system as part of the order. The steps come following several years of discussion between the city and the EPA over sanitary sewer system backups throughout the community, with originally proposed EPA court action requiring the city to fix the entire system, narrowed to a willingness by the EPA to allow for the addressing of priority areas through a less intensive administrative process in the more immediate future. Members voted to hire AECOM to prepare the necessary sewer system reports for a fee of $456,620. During EPA negotiations, the city was able to show that it had already taken proactive steps to address problems through the creation of both a sanitary sewer master plan and a storm water sewer master plan, which the existence of which are believed to be helping in gaining administrative compliance order. And our last story in local news, candidates for general primary election can begin circulating petitions. September 1st was the first day that candidates for the March 15, 2016 general primary election may begin to circulate petitions. 11 Macon County board seats will be up for nomination, along with the countywide offices of auditor, circuit clerk, coroner, recorder, and state's attorney. Signature requirements for the countywide offices are 148 signatures for a Democrat candidates and 145 for Republican candidates. Candidates will file their petitions with the required number of signatures, a statement of candidacy, and attached receipt from a statement of economic interest filed in 2015. A candidate filing period will be November 23rd, starting at 8 a.m. until 5 o'clock p.m. on November 30th. Note the county clerk's office will be closed November 26th and 27th in observance of the Thanksgiving holiday. All precinct committeemen in the county will be elected at the March 15th, 2016 general primary. Committeemen will file a statement of candidacy and a petition containing at least 10 signatures from the precinct. Individuals may obtain petitions, state of candidacy forms, and other information at the Macon County Clerk's Office, 141 South Main Street, Room 104, at the county website at www.co.macon.il.us. We now turn to Paul Osborne's Osborne Online, and his first story is, How Long Does It Take to Become a Nuisance? I stopped at the Dairy Queen in South Shores and decided to go inside and get something to eat, instead of using the drive-through window. After I ordered, the cashier gave me a number, 57, I got my drink, and headed to a table to wait for my meal to be brought to me. When the young woman brought the meal, she forgot to take the large plastic number, 57, with her. Taking the number indicates the meal has been delivered to the table or the booth. So, about 20 minutes later, after I finished my meal and put the remnants in the waste can, I marched to the counter and waved number 57 in front of three or four employees and said, I haven't received my meal yet. A look of horror mixed with embarrassment came over their faces, and the supervisor asked, Will you check on 57 and see what happened to his meal? Then I put the 57 on the counter and said, I'm joking. I received my meal and have eaten it. The number 57 was left on my table. A look of relief came over their faces, and a couple of them laughed about it. Still, maybe I should use the drive-through window for a couple of months before going back inside. Just think, if I was retired, I could have all the time I needed to go in places and make a nuisance of myself. I would be banned by every restaurant and store in town after only a few months. More than a few times, I've mentioned how fast the traffic flows up Franklin Street in front of the downtown post office. Most days when I walk to the post office, crossing at the crosswalk is a challenge because when cars get the green light a block away, it's like the start of the Indy 500 by the time they reach the front of the post office. Those cars cover that block in very short amount of time. I've always wanted to carry a green racing flag with me, the kind used in NASCAR or Indy races, and pull it out of my coat and wave it like I'm a flagman starting the Indy 500 as all the cars go blasting by. It would be fun and release a lot of frustration, plus get a lot of puzzled looks from the drivers. The other day, I was nearly run over by someone driving fast on South Franklin Street at the Main Street intersection. Against the light, a woman came flying through the intersection, in a car, of course, and was in the lane next to the one I was crossing. She quickly changed to my lane and intentionally almost hit me. Then she went back to the lane where she had been when I saw her coming. I don't know what her problem was, but I don't think we have any readers who are disgruntled enough to kill this editor. Maybe she belongs to ISIS. Wait a minute, probably not. Since the driver was a woman, they would probably behead her for driving a car or attempting to have contact with a man who was not her husband. I just waved to her, and now she's wondering if I recognize her as being the intersection assassin. I know it's a little thing to mention, but sometimes it's the little things that can drive you nuts. It seems that most times when I buy a fish sandwich at a drive-thru window, the fish and ingredients look exactly like they were slapped on a bun by a hateful robot. I like fish fillet sandwiches, but I find it mildly irritating that half the fillet is often hanging on one side of the bun. It's like the head of a dead animal with its tongue hanging out. Shouldn't there be some rule that the fillet is centered on the bun instead of half of it hanging out? I think the next time I buy a fish fillet, I will get the half on a bun treatment. I'm going to take the sandwich back and tell the cashier that my sandwich is dead because its tongue is hanging out the side. I know I come from the old school where product presentation is important, but is it too much to ask for to place my hamburger or fish fillet in the center of a bun? I call that a balanced meal. That's the kind of thing we should be talking about in this presidential campaign. Bonafide issues. His next commentary are musings on life in Decatur's auto world. I had to take Christine, my possessed car, to a local dealer so he could fix some defect that the manufacturer warned owners could be a problem. It was something to do with the button that raises and lowers the seats that could malfunction. As you know, if you've read some earlier columns about Christine, when it comes to that car, my being ejected through the roof by a possible faulty seat control is the least of my worries. The dealer did a great job correcting the problem, and Christine didn't start up and run out of the garage even once during the procedure. A couple of months ago, I wrote that some drivers hadn't adjusted to driving in the left lane on South Franklin on Wood Street. That's where the new streetscape design has a curb jutting out and blocking that lane, forcing all lanes to angle to the right as they head through the downtown. Some drivers still haven't adjusted. The lane divider lines are not that clear, and when I am driving in the left lane, the driver next to me sometimes thinks I am pulling over into his lane. I've received a few horn blasts and the number one finger sign resulting from some close calls, and I'm the one who is driving in the correct lane. To my knowledge, the finger sign is not something taught in high school driver's training classes. While I'm on the subject of car horns, my previous car that I drove for several years had a horn that never honked. It taught me a lot about patience, and other drivers must have thought I was one of the most polite drivers on the road because I never honked my horn. I've had my present car for about a year, and I've never used the horn, except when I bought the car to see if it worked. I guess having a horn that didn't work for so many years trained me not to use my car horn even when it does work. I walked over to the Cruise 11 to remember 9/11 event in Central Park Sunday afternoon, and I don't know about anyone else, but those classic cars shows give me a real flashback to my teenage years through seeing the same models of cars I once owned. There was a 1955 Chevy that was exactly like the one I had back then. I never gave a thought during those years that someday the cars I drove would be considered classics, be in car shows and worth a lot of money. That was back when motorists drove their cars instead of being driven by them with all the warning lights and sounds and voices going off. Thanks to the guy who recently rescued a damsel in distress when her car's horn wouldn't stop honking, apparently tripped by the security system in the 100 block of South Water Street, right in front of our office building. After she unsuccessfully tried to stop it from honking, a young man ran over and did something to disable it. The woman gave him a hug in gratitude. Why didn't I go and fix her horn? Are you joking? I can't even control my own car. Sirius gave me free radio programming for my car where I could enjoy commercial-free music from one of several channels. The channel I selected was playing Don McLean's American Pie, actually recorded in 1971, when I left the municipal parking garage and headed for home, and the song was ending just as I was pulling up into my garage at home. That means I listened to only one song from the channel for that whole trip from downtown to the southwest side of Decatur. I think I'll stick to talk radio. November 1st is a really important day for car owners like me. Daylight savings time ends, and for the first time since March 8th, the digital clock in my car will be correct instead of being 1 hour off. Sure, I could adjust the clock when the time changes in the spring, but then I wouldn't have an item to finish this column, and November 1st wouldn't be as special. And he puts in parentheses, big smile. Turning to our obituaries, the first one is Edna Mae Baginski in Decatur. Edna Mae Baginski, 91, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, September 27, 2015, at St. Mary's Hospital, surrounded by her family. Services to celebrate the life of Edna Baginski will be at 11 a.m. Friday, October 9, 2015, at Mount Calvary Lutheran Church. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Friday at the church before the service. Burial will be in the Macon County Memorial Park. Memorials may be directed to the Mount Calvary Lutheran Church. The family of Edna Mae Baginski is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2991 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur, Illinois. View the online obituary and send condolences to the family at www.gracelandfairlawn.com. Next obituary is for Lily Burries in Decatur. Lily, Miss B. Burries, 56, of Decatur, Illinois, departed this life on Wednesday, September 30th, 2015, at Decatur Memorial Hospital from her battle with cancer. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 10th, at 2015, at the Church of the Living God, Temple No. 1, 1915 North Martin Luther King Drive, with no visitation, with Reverend Jesse Bates of Abundant Life Christian Church officiating. Burial will follow at Greenwood Cemetery. Walker Service Home, Funeral Service and Chapel are handling the funeral arrangements at www.walkerfs.com. Virginia M. Doughty, Palmer, in Palmer, Illinois. Virginia M. Doughty, 100, of Palmer, passed away Saturday, October 3rd, 2015, at 9:15 a.m. at Taylorville Care Center in Taylorville. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, October 7th, 2015, at 11 a.m. at Sutton Memorial Funeral Home in Taylorville, with Pastor Chad Foster officiating. Burial will be at the Anderson Cemetery in rural Palmer. Visitation will be held Wednesday, October 7th, 2015, from 9 to 11 a.m. at Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville. Arrangements by Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville. Sign the online guestbook at www.suttonmemorialhome.com. And from Mwikwa, Dwight E. Eskew, 92, of Mwikwa, died October 3rd, 2015, in his home. Funeral services will be from 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 7th, 2015, in Sites Funeral Home in Mwikwa. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. prior to the service time in Sites Funeral Home. Burial will be the Odd Fellows Cemetery, Mwikwa, with full military honors by the American Legion Post No. 370. Memorials may be made to the Macon United Methodist Church or the donor's choice. The site's funeral home, Mwikwa, has been entrusted with the care and service arrangements. Condolences for the family may be left at www.sitesfh.com. We have several funerals pending for Tuesday, October 6th. Brenner Mary Alice, 87, Decatur, died Sunday, October 4th, 2015, Morin and Goble Funeral Home. Campbell Ronald Dean, 76, in Stonington, died Monday, October 5th, 2015, Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Robert R. Carter, 82, of Huntsville, died Sunday, October 4th, 2015, at the Meyer Funeral Home, Greenup. Constance M. Saxby, 93, of Decatur, died Monday, October 5th, 2015, Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. and Larry Dean Swank, 63, of Charleston, died Sunday, October 4th, at the Swangle Odell Funeral Home, Neal. And there are only two funerals today. Brenda K. Beavers, 78, Mattoon, formerly of Sullivan, at 10 a.m. in Green Hill Cemetery, Sullivan. And Mary Olive Meisenheimer, 102, in Tolono, formerly of Decatur, at 10:30 a.m. in Marrowbone Township Cemetery, Bethany. We have one more obit to read from Nokomis. Donald E. Verdon, 83, of Nokomis, Illinois, formerly of Ramsey, Illinois, died on Monday, June 8, 2015, at Nokomis Rehab and Health Center in Nokomis, Illinois. Celebration of life service with potluck dinner will be held at 12 noon, Sunday, October 11th, at his home in Rural Route 1, Box 165, Ramsey, Illinois. Miller Funeral Home in Ramsey, Illinois, is in charge of the arrangements. Turning back to Mr. Osborne's column, photos of Mayor's office remind me of another time in my life. I was looking for some photos in our files today when I came across two that were shot on my last day in the Mayor's office at City Hall a little over 7 years ago, and it seems like only yesterday. One of the reasons it doesn't seem that long ago to me is because I've continued to write and speak about City Hall, not only in the City Beat column each week, but also appearing on the City Hall Insider on WSOY Buyers and Company program for an hour every Thursday morning at 7 a.m. I've been commenting on Brian Byers' program, either as mayor or former mayor, for the last 12 years, except for several months in between the time I left the office and Mike McElroy was elected mayor. For the last 12 years, the two of us maintained a close bond regarding city government, talking and meeting about the mayor's job and issues that confront the city. I was in my sixth year when I left office, and Tuna had just finished his sixth year when he suddenly passed away last month. Over the past 12 years, I've had the opportunity to talk and write about city government from a position that very few editors, publishers experience. I've not only written about our city and government for decades from outside looking in, but also from the inside looking out during the years I served as mayor. There are times in my column that I mention the fact that I was mayor, not to boast, but to point out that the reason I know the background of a particular vote and council action is because I was there chairing the meetings and dealing with city issues. I don't have to use secondhand information. I was there. Monday, Mayor Pro Tem Julie Moore Wolf was selected by the City Council to be the mayor until the election of 2017. Julie has always been a friend, has been a friend for many years, and I know she will do an excellent job in the position. Although quite a few people encouraged me to seek the position of mayor again, and also that I have an appointed city councilman to fill Julie's seat, I appreciate the confidence, but I have no interest in running for or being appointed to public office again, and certainly didn't notify anyone on council that I was interested. I was blessed to be elected both times I ran for mayor, and wouldn't trade those years of service and experience for anything. Although there were a few parts of the position that weren't all that enjoyable, overall I certainly loved being mayor for the people of this great city. It was an honor for me to serve in that position. While I appreciate some people thinking of me in mayoral or councilman terms again, the rest of my career is to my community as a private citizen and editor of this newspaper. It's time for others to step up. As I looked through the photos of my last day in the mayor's office that I saw today, I thought back on my feelings of that day. When I closed the door of the mayor's office behind me for the final time, I left a piece of my heart there, and I knew I wouldn't return. That was 7 years ago, and in the years since, despite all the conversations I've had with the late mayor and others in city government, and all the columns I've written about City Hall, I have never returned to the mayor's office for any reason. I've been to City Hall, but never stepped inside that office. I'm not sure why, but I don't think I've intentionally avoided it. Maybe it's because behind that door is a ton of bittersweet memories that I don't want to disturb. And he continues on, "Do you remember those days back when? Remember when North Main Street, pictured above in the right of the photo, curved over to North Water Street a few blocks before Pershing Road, when Chaps Amusement Park was in existence? Remember eating at the Howard Johnson's on East Pershing Road? Remember when most stores were closed on Sunday because it was the day of rest? Remember when television station WAND-TV was WTVP? And remember when the A&W root beer stands were seemingly everywhere, including the small towns near Decatur? Remember when the annual fun fair was held in Fairview Park? Remember when Tolly's Market was a familiar name in the Decatur area? Remember when service station's attendants pumped your gas, checked your oil, wiped your windshield, and checked the air in your tires, all for the price of a gallon of gas, which was about 18 to 20 cents? Remember when Stephen Decatur High School basketball teams routinely made the Sweet 16 tournament at the Huff Gym in Champaign? Remember when Blondie Bell's was located downtown near the northwest corner of Main and Water Street? Remember the record-playing booths at the Macon Music where you could listen to the latest hit record you were thinking about buying? Remember riding the escalator at the Goldblatt store at Fairview Plaza? Remember learning how to drive a straight-shift car? Remember listening to Dick Biondi and later Larry Lujak on WLS when you were a teenager? Remember Teen Town for junior high and high school kids every Friday night in Decatur? Remember Shopper's World on Pershing and how big it seemed? Remember the photo booth in the dime store where you and a friend could have four photos taken and processed in a few minutes for a quarter, and you couldn't wait to see that photo strip come out of the machine because all of you made crazy faces at the camera? Remember reading and checking out books at the Carnegie Library on the southwest corner of Main and El Dorado? Remember Romano's Pizza on South Moffat, and later South Jasper Street, and the taking of the pizza to Steak and Shake to eat with a Coke delivered by a car hop to your car, and watching all the other young people drive through the parking lot? Remember going to the Lake Decatur Beach to swim and keep cool? Remember driving around the transfer house at Lincoln Square within minutes of getting your first driver's license? Remember church camp and a vacation Bible school? Remember eating at the Walgreens store mezzanine in the senior citizens building? Remember eating on the Walgreens store mezzanine in the citizens office building? Remember the strong scent of merchandise inside the Montgomery Ward store and other retailers when air conditioning was not common and big floor fans were used to keep customers cool? Well, they really didn't do that much cooling. Remember when Decatur had the Morning Herald and Evening Review newspapers? Remember when mail was sometimes delivered to your home or office two or three times a day? No kidding here. Remember the party line telephones where half a dozen of your neighbors had the same telephone line as your parents and many listened to their neighbors' conversations? I'm all out of space and I barely scratched the surface with simple personal memories and experiences of another time in Decatur history. We live in today's world, but the memories of the past are always with us. And so concludes our reading of the Decatur Tribune for this week, October 5th. I am your reader, Norman Davis. I hope you enjoyed our reading. Thank you, and come back again next week.